everyone, and welcome to For Azeroth, the podcast all about World of Warcraft. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Manny. Manny, it's here. It's happening. 8.1.5.
Yeah, it hit, and it's a really fulfilling patch so far. I mean, we're only a day after its launch, but I was up late playing. I was enjoying all the stuff that was happening and access to. I went through all the stuff that I could do to get my jewel crafting, jewel hammer's focus up and ready before raid time. I went and I did the Magni quests so I could get like that extra eye level on my Heart of Azeroth. Just all of that. And I haven't even done like so many things that are still open. We actually had a chance to like get into the Brawler's Arena before recording this show, and that was a lot of fun. So this patch is breathing a lot of life into the game. I'm happy for that.
That's good. I did the Magni quest as well, and it's really, really short. And it's has some elements of the void in it too. I mean, I feel like we already know about all the Azshara stuff. We already know that, you know, we're going down an Azoth type route. There's all the stuff with Zaltath as well. So, I mean, there's void old god stuff all over this expansion. I don't think that Blizzard can really claim the no old gods in BFA anymore. I think it's pretty obvious what's going on. But even in the Magni quest line, there was a lot of interference from the void. But I was surprised, and I knew it was going to be short, but it very much was like, Magni needs help. Let's go get Mother. Now Mother's in the heart chamber. Come back later. Like, okay.
Definitely. But with the Naifu quests that people are picking up, we are getting a little more look into void happenings.
Is that in the game now, or is that? Oh, it is. Oh man, I don't know what it is about patches or quest givers or what in 8.1. Well, not even 8.1.5. Really, I feel like almost all the way through BFA, it hasn't been very obvious to me where I need to go, other than the war campaign, which like always starts with Nathanos. So I know that when a new patch comes in, or you know, I've waited the appropriate amount of time for their gating, I know that I need to go to Nathanos. That's where my next start of my next thing of the war campaign is going to be. But so many other pieces seem to be all over the place, like things that I know are in the game because of, you know, fan sites or what have you. Like, I know that they should be there somewhere, but I need to go looking for them. And I guess the other exception to that was the Magni quest, because as soon as I logged in, it was like, bam, you're on this quest now. Like, go see Magni. He needs your help. He's in Nazmir. Ta-da, done. Actually, I don't even, because I logged in fairly quickly after, and there's been some hot fixes since, but it just showed up in my quest log. Like, normally when something like, when a quest automatically pops up, there's like, you get the quest text and you get, you know, sometimes the voiceover or whatever. I got none of that. It just was in my quest log. I was like, oh, I have a quest in Nazmir. Oh, wait, that's the Magni thing. Oh, okay. But, you know, it immediately put me on it. So I've had no other anything directing me in any way, shape or form over to Zaltath.
Well, the Zaltath stuff is supposed to come with the Nag invasions. When I was on the PTR and I was testing that was the quickest way to get it, is that you would get the breadcrumb trail from those. So I assume that's something that they have, that you're going to encounter later on, that they will start pushing towards it.
So is that the Naga invasions? Those are the world quest areas, because I did one of those because it had a I can't remember. It looked kind of like a pearl icon, and from hovering over it, I couldn't really tell what the reward was. And I was like, is this a trinket? Or, and then it's like, you know, increases your secondary stats by 1,000 when you're outdoors or whatever. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then once I actually completed the world quest, then it was like, oh, it's just a buff that lasts for 2 hours. That wasn't exactly obvious, but I was like, I should figure out what this is, because that's a pretty sweet stat increase.
It is incredibly good stat increase because it's not on gear. Because it's an aura, the world doesn't scale with that. You don't get extra health on your mobs or anything. So that's just pure cutting through stuff. So I guess a little PSA is when you're about to go and do all your world quests, do that one first and it'll make everything else that much easier.
Yeah. Including, and I totally did it because I wanted to figure out what it was. And then I was like, and it's raid time. So I guess that's kind of useless.
Well, next time when you're doing world quests, you could definitely go and check it out. And
yeah, now I know. Now I actually know what that's there for. So is there some item that drops or something from those world quests, like, or just from the Naga that are involved in those world quests that will then send me down that Zalatath trail?
Exactly. That's okay. What it is. And I assume that they might increase the chance of it dropping as we get closer to the release, because we are four or five weeks out from the Crucible of Storms release. And this is sort of what leads people in there storyline wise. So I can see that they wouldn't want to just be like, hey guys, and go do this for reasons we don't want to tell you because we want you focusing on other stuff. But that's the big thing about 8.1.5. There's little to no time gating. All of this stuff is available from the get-go. They didn't wait 2 weeks and then start Naga invasions. It's there. They didn't wait a week so that you could complete the Magni quest before you could do the new war campaign stuff. It's right there. And I guess we were talking about it before the show. The one sort of time constraint is go do this mission that takes a day.
That was part of the war campaign where so you go and you help Bane, and then this is Horde side, obviously. Go and help Bane to return Derek to Jaina. And then after you've completed that, then you have to get your agents to help you. Was it like move the or sail the ship into so like not crash the ship, but you had to sail it somewhere and then go and tell Sylvanas and be like, hey, guess what? You know, there's one of our ships. The Alliance must have stole it. Jerks. Which I found kind of interesting because in this expansion, more than any other expansion, the characters that are available to you are pretty big story characters. Like you've got like Rexxar and
Velestra, the Nightborn. Yeah.
The Nightborn. Right. So, you know, like you've got like really kind of recognizable characters that are part of your mission table now. So it's like, for me, looking at that from like a lore perspective, it's like if I chose to send Rexxar on that mission, does that mean that like Rexxar is another co-conspirator of Bane's sort of thing? You know, and I know that that's never going to be canon, but no matter who you sent on that mission from that mission table, then you're like there are potential lore ramifications from that.
So the way I read that mission was that the people you're sending have no idea what's going on. It's pure plausible deniability. Zelling's like, okay, you go back. I'm going to leave the ship here. You just tell your guys to investigate here as part of like patrolling.
Okay. For some reason, I thought that we were sending them on the mission to move the ship, but Zelling was moving the ship to where, and then you were sending your guys out to recover it. Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And they just come in. They're like, oh, we just saw the Swift Vengeance over in pirate controlled waters. Like you better tell somebody. And so you go and go like, whoa, I just heard from Rexxar that the Swift Vengeance is under pirate control. What the hell's up with that? And you didn't discover the ship.
Fair enough.
You have nothing to do with it. Plausible deniability.
Which that brings up kind of an interesting question, because you do have the option to after you pick up the first section of the quest from a Torin who's standing down at the docks, you have the option of reporting into Nathanos and telling Nathanos that, you know, Bane is planning something and everything else. So did you rat on Bane or did you not rat on Bane?
So Joss only got this option because she already sold out Sorafang. I did not get this option because I did not sell out Sorafang. So for me, there was no choice. I was going to be a co-conspirator.
Right. Okay. So then this is somewhat interesting then, because this would be how the player choice is now playing out in the narrative. So again, I'm assuming that because we just went through. So obviously I had the full day of the mission table in order to unlock the second half of the war campaign quest, which was over in Stormsong Valley. You had like the meeting of all the Horde leaders and he was basically going to decide Bane's fate because he had been. Well, I guess not captured yet. This is his capture. This is his jailing, essentially.
This is bringing the trap.
Yeah, this is the trap for Bane. So I'm assuming that you're, even though you were a co-conspirator and I was not, because I totally ratted on Bane. I was like, Nathanos, guess what's going down, man? We got to stop this, bro. And then he's like, no, no, you go along with it. You get your hands dirty. You get all the intel, which kind of sucked, I will say, because I didn't want to kill Dark Rangers. And so when you go onto the ship, all of the Forsaken crew members, you get them down to like one health or zero health or something, and they surrender and they run away. But the Dark Rangers are fanatically loyal to Sylvanas, so you have to actually kill them. And I'm like, I don't want to be doing this. Like, why is this happening? And I know it's
the other way.
I know, like, it's for gameplay reasons.
You can't submit. You're a part of this, so you die by this sword. It's like, no, they stop at one health. I'm like, have to stay my blade. Bane wasn't here, buddy. You'd be done. You would be done.
But yeah, so like, it's funny that you and I are on opposite sides of this Horde conflict, apparently. But yeah, it just I found that kind of sucked, given that I was like, I know I was supposed to be undercover, but still, I was like, oh, I really don't want to be killing these Dark Rangers. Dark Rangers are so cool. But yeah, so then afterwards in the cinematic at that meeting of all the Horde leaders, I assume, because this is one of our big questions, is like, how much would the player agency actually matter when it came to big story beats? So in my cinematic, which you were able to watch, I was doing sharing my screen with you earlier, my character is standing there next to Bane. Was your cinematic the same?
Yes, okay. My cinematic was the same.
Any other like fallout from, or were you discovered in any way, or?
No, like there's an entire thing where Sylvanas sort of like walks by you and looking, and if you're in the know, and so, and like when you were doing it, it was like, yeah, we're setting this up, make sure everything's clear because we don't want this messed up. Meanwhile, for me, it's like, yeah, we're having some meeting. We're not going to tell you what it's about, but could you get this all sorted out for us? So for you, you knew it was a trap. For me, it was a meeting for unknown reasons in enemy territory. Beyond that, it was very much the same. But I think the bigger thing about it is that you had the option to switch allegiances and sort of join people against Sylvanas. I never got an option to sort of get on board with Sylvanas.
Right. So now that you've chosen the Bane Sarfang side, you don't have the option of proving your loyalty to Sylvanas at all versus me. Yeah. Because I did have the option to tell Nathanos or not tell Nathanos about what Bane's plans were. And I was like, oh, of course I'm telling Nathanos. Why these stupid traitors got to be in my horde? What's going on?
Yeah. So I think that that's Blizzard's unsubtle way of telling you, Joss, that you're on the wrong side of history. They're giving you every option to switch out, and once you do, you don't get an option to go back.
Which kind of makes me want to stick with the Sylvanas side just to see that part of the story.
I agree. I think you should. I'm not going to be there when the ramifications fall down upon you, but I want to see how it goes out.
Well, and this is kind of the thing. I mean, and the more that they kind of branch out, like the longer these paths continue, the more interesting it becomes to figure out what the end game is from a player perspective. Because like, if we keep going through the rest of BFA through, you know, 8.2 and 0.3, 0.4, however many points we're going to have in BFA, if we keep going down this road, then in the end, is it going to end up with, you know, one player being on the outs with the Horde and one player, you know, being revered as, you know, hero of the rebellion? Like, how far are we going to go down these different paths? Because as we saw with this Bane cinematic, it was the same for both you and I. So, you know, we were both standing on the right hand side of Bane, except, you know, like I knew what was going on. You didn't know what was going on. At the end of it, there's no repercussions for you. There's no reward for me. It just, you know, is what happened. And the other thing we should mention, because you had to tell me this, I didn't realize this, but you can actually, after the cinematic plays and Bane is taken away, you can actually go around and talk to all the Horde leaders and get their take on what's going on with Sylvanas. And I also have to say that I understand a little bit better now that I've seen the cinematic why Bane was pissed off, because I also hadn't seen on live the Derek Proudmoore like torture strung up on the altar scene, because apparently you talk to Nathanos and you can ask him where Derek's being held, but there's no like quest chain. There's nothing telling you that there's more to that story. So for me, I didn't play through that on live. I just played the war campaign and I did the quests and finished, got my AP and moved on. So I missed the whole section of, you know, Derek being turned into a weapon and everything else. So it was just like Bane was just kind of pissed off that we raised Derek. And I was like, I don't really understand what the problem is, like raising Derek. And then he went more into the idea of Sylvanas denying free will from those that she raises as Forsaken, which was always as it was Lillian Voss who, when you're talking to them around the campfire, she says something along the lines of, you know, Sylvanas used to take great pride in the fact that Forsaken were different than the Scourge, but now she's basically controlling or was planning to control the mind of Derek Proudmoore, which is not okay, because then that basically makes her no better than the Lich King. So I understand a little bit better now what the problem is, but I hadn't seen any of that stuff in game. So I was kind of like, huh, why wouldn't we want to raise, you know, important alliance figures to fight for the Horde? Like, that would be so demoralizing. That seems like a good plan. What's the problem? Bane, come on, get on board.
Yeah, and in the initial parts of the war campaign, when you're going around and you're raising this person from Kul'Tiras history to like give you the entire like lowdown on which generals to kill, which ships are key to it, and like what strategic locations you can do, it was fine. Lillian Voss was like not only hand in hand happy with it, she was the person actually raising and like getting these people
like acclimatized to being Forsaken, yeah, for lack of a better term. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the switch. And Lillian Voss, her speech blurb is longer than pretty much anybody else's, because there's the key difference. And we've sort of seen this in the Battle for Darkshore, or where the Dark Rangers are being like, now getting new ranks from like Night Elves, where we have like the Dark Warden and what's her name? The Sarah Moon.
Sarah, yeah.
Yeah. Right? Where Ciri was clearly against Sylvanas before she was brought back, and now she's all gung-ho about it. And is that a bit of the manipulation there that we didn't quite see? There's something to be said about that.
Well, I don't think so, because the whole idea that Darkshore showed us is that if people don't want to be raised, then they can't be. So obviously she wanted to be raised. And then when you talk to her, like, you can talk to her right after she's raised, and she says, like, basically Tyrande failed and abandoned them and all the rest, and Alun failed and abandoned them and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's in her dialogue. So she felt betrayed and abandoned by her leaders and her goddess, I guess. So that kind of explains why she's like, screw them. You know, like, it is quite a quick 180.
Yeah.
But it is, at least that text is in there. So
yeah,
it's not quite the same as torturing somebody.
Yeah. It is such a sudden 180 that, like, I can understand them being like, oh man, they abandoned us, and like, yeah, I'll be raised because I want to fight again, but I don't want to fight against the people, because that's worse than abandoning the people. I was defending the people and I didn't get help defending the people. So now I'm going to, like, actively try and kill the people. That's what it doesn't make sense.
I don't think it's so much she wants revenge necessarily against the Night Elves. I think it was more revenge against Tyrande herself, and nothing was going to stand in her way. So that's kind of the vibe that I got. But anyways, we're getting a little bit off track here. But yeah, so we did. You do actually finally get, if you stand around the bonfire and talk to each individual racial leader, you do get a little bit more of what each race thinks. But at the same time, it kind of sucks that it's so far into the expansion and it's after quite a big event. So it's, you know, not only the raising of Derek Proudmoore and trying to turn him into a weapon, but then also the arrest of Bane. It's like, I would have liked to see opinions and thoughts and things all the way through. Like, were they on board with the war, but now they're not? Or, you know, like, because it very much was the same thing repeated probably, what, 10 times over, with the one exception of the orcs. The orcs seemed to be on board with it because loyalty, like, and they basically were saying what I was saying, is that, you know, we had a plan. This guy betrayed the plan and is kind of a traitor, so that's bad. So, I mean, like, everyone else, though, had the same opinion, just worded in a way that was appropriate to their race, basically.
Yeah. And we will. Do you want to just talk about honor now, or do you want to put it later in the episode?
I think maybe. Let me see. I just want to look at our emails, the things that were sent in. I guess we could talk about an hour. We could do it as a lore segment once I get my voice back completely.
You know what? Yeah, let's set it aside for a little bit of a lore discussion. Mm-hmm. around what's happened, because the Alliance side somewhat mirrors what we've been dealing with here, but we haven't had really a chance to go through the Alliance side yet. Because it's literally one day after it.
Yeah. But I feel like the Alliance side is fairly closely mirrors the Horde side, because, I mean, I saw a whole bunch of Alliance players running around, and you can kind of guess based on, like, so Horde side, the quests are, you know, the Alliance is trying to spy and listen in, go kill Alliance spies and break their listening devices. So I'm sure flip side on the Alliance side, it's probably like, you know, kill the peons or something, and to allow the spies to infiltrate and then go set up the listening devices. Like, I don't know, but I would guess that was probably the war campaign seemed to be coming together a lot more in 8.15 and very much showing mirrored events, if that makes sense. Like, they're less about each faction's individual plans and more about, like, okay, now we're fighting again, or we're at least in the same area when these things are happening. So what does that look like?
Definitely. And you can see it from like exactly what you said. You can see it when Valera is sent by Bane to go talk with Jaina. And then on the Alliance side, it's Valera shows up.
Valera talks to Jaina.
Yeah. And so like there's definitely a lot more interweaving in a good way where it all lines up nicely.
Yes.
Thank you. And so you're no longer missing as much of the things, or the pieces seem to fit together well. People are not trying to hammer it in like, you fit here.
Yeah. It did seem like, and again, like I haven't played on the Alliance side, but it seems to be fitting together just based on where I've seen Alliance players. It seems to make a lot more sense now.
And I would love, and I haven't played through it yet, I would love if maybe on the Alliance side you find out, or maybe tip Sylvanas to the leak somehow, and find out how she figured it all out, if it wasn't just like somebody on the Horde side being a rat.
An informant. It's a really interesting kind of idea, because right now when we were talking about what kind of sparked this whole conversation was the idea of how much our player agency and player choice on the Horde side is going to matter. And the Alliance doesn't seem to have those same kind of quests, right? So it would be interesting to see, like, do you as an Alliance player tell Sylvanas what's happening, or do you as an Alliance player keep your mouth shut? That could be interesting too. But like I say, I haven't played through the Alliance side yet, so I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But it would be nice for both sides to have choices to make.
Definitely. I have yet to see, and I have talked to Alliance players, and I have played through a lot of it myself. I have yet to see a single part where the Alliance has a moral choice to make between two parts of their faction, or even just something beyond the Kul'tiran choice, where it's like, what do you want to name this ship? And it's a choice of four names. And it's like, okay, I don't feel like that's the biggest use.
That's not really, that's not really a choice.
I mean, you could name it something like incredibly stupid, or you could name it Anduin's Wrath. And I'm telling you, people, name it Anduin's Wrath.
Why would you ever name anything Anduin's Wrath? He has no wrath.
Exactly. It's an infinite ship. It's beautiful.
Oh, man. But yeah, so that's, I guess, our experiences in the first day of 8.1.5. Have you actually created a Zandalari? Because the Zandalari and Kul'tirans are now available. So have you made a Zandalari or a Kul'tiran?
I haven't even finished the quest yet.
Neither have I.
I was right there, and I'm like, I gotta record Faz. I guess I'll do it. I'll do it later. So like, I parked my tune, and I will be playing through that. Except then I got distracted because we'd started doing Brawler's Guild. And I was like, this is incredibly fun and enjoyable too.
So I will say, with the Brawler's Guild, I haven't actually gone in and done a fight yet, but I very much enjoyed standing on the side and watching and placing bets on who was going to win, the monster or the player. So that was really fun. I did enjoy it. And it's an experience I haven't had before. So I do want to jump back in and do more of that. There were a lot of people doing it today, which was really cool. So as I mentioned, Zandalari and Kul'tirans are available now. Also, the World of Warcraft and character services are now on sale. So specifically, if you want a race change to a Zandalari, which is what I am kind of thinking I'm going to do. Although, okay, so here is my Zandalari dilemma. I have a 120 hunter, a 120 paladin, a 120 priest, and then a couple of characters in the like 100 to 110 range, all of which can be Zandalaris. At first, I was like, I'm totally going to race change my paladin because Zandalari paladins are so freaking cool. I'm going to do that. I'm going to be a Zandalari paladin. And then I was like, opened up Warcraft and I'm looking at my screen and I'm like, oh, my blood elf paladin looks so badass, though, in all her heritage armor and stuff. And OK, so I'm not going to change the paladin. Then I flip over to my hunter and I'm like, OK, Adwiel, you're about to become a Zandalari. Oh, but you were my first character. You've been a blood elf forever. I can't change you. So then I flipped over to the priest. I'm like, okay, we're gonna have a Zandalari priest. We're gonna be Vol'jin-y. This is gonna be so cool. Cause I was like, okay, troll, shadow hunters, like hunter. Nope, can't do that. Okay, well, maybe Vol'jin is kind of like this weird, like hunter, priest, shaman, like mix. So I'm like, okay, I'll go be a priest. That'll be my thing. And then, so I open up my priest and my priest is undead. And I'm like, this is my only undead character and undead priests are super cool. Oh man. So can't do that. I need to cough. I can't talk this much.
No, you're having the Dazar Lord dilemma there. You just don't know. I was looking at doing the shaman, like I was saying last week. And then I got the sickest, most badass piece of art done by a fellow shaman, a fellow member of Get Your Crit Together, Torok, who then changed to a troll, Zandalar troll himself. And I can't do that image, the disjustice or the injustice of switching tunes right after I got it. So I'm orc and I'm proud. And I guess I'm going to switch, or not even switch another tune. I'm probably going to try and level a character up to get the heritage armor and everything, because if I just switch, I wouldn't have the heritage armor.
I'm not totally in love with the heritage armor. I did take a look at it and I was kind of like, I don't know if that's actually, I mean, yes, character services are super expensive and boosts. So boosts are not on sale right now. So what's on sale right now is race changes, faction changes, character transfers, and I think name changes are as well. I think those are all on sale, but boosts are not on sale. So I have a character right now who is a level 40 troll rogue that I had met, that I had been leveling up through the Legion pre-event. I haven't touched her since. So I do have that character. And I was kind of like, Zandalari rogue could be kind of cool. But oh man, it's difficult to kind of nail down exactly what I want to do and exactly what I want to play. But okay. We should also mention that alongside the character services, like I mentioned, World of Warcraft is also on sale. So BFA and the World of Warcraft Complete Collection, then that's all $20 off until all of this is until March 31st.
Yeah. And so it is only on, it is only three services that are being discounted by 30% or 32% to be exact. The character transfer, so you can transfer your character over to Earthen Ring if you want to. A faction change, so if you were previously playing Alliance, you can switch over to Horde. And a race change, so if you wanted to be one of the new races, you can do that as well. Those are the three that are being discounted by 32%. And as you said, the World of Warcraft BFA expansion or the Complete Collection is $20 off until the end of the month.
So yeah, and as I don't think Manny actually mentioned it, but Get Your Crit Together is recruiting. So if any of those things sound like they're right up your alley, whether you want to transfer over to our server or faction change over to the Horde, feel free to do that now while it's 30% off and come play with Get Your Crit Together.
So that is like really good news. I think that a lot of people were going to be doing the racial changes and giving that little bit of discount might incentivize additional people who were kind of on the fence, but also gives a break for the people who were going to do it, who are just like, screw it, I'm going to level up this paladin, and as soon as it shows up, I'm race changing over to the Zandalari, or I'm going to level up whatever and I'm going to change the Kul'Tiran. So I think it's a good move on Blizzard's part, but not everybody does.
This is what I don't really understand, because I feel like, I mean, maybe people are upset because they feel like Blizzard's taking advantage of people that were on the fence potentially. But I feel like this is very consumer friendly, right? Like this isn't a big, huge money grab, because like you mentioned, there's going to be like, this is the time where there are going to be a lot of faction transfers, character transfers, and race changes. those are all things that are going to happen when these Zandalarian Kul Tirans are announced, because these were, like, people have been looking forward to these since the announcement of allied races and the announcement of BFA, when they said you're going to get to play as Zandalari trolls. Like, yes, it's taken much, much longer than people would have hoped, myself included. But now that it's available, lots of people are going to, like Manny said, have characters that they've leveled up that they were going to race change and everything else. So if those sales were going to happen anyways, and now they're 30% cheaper for people, that's great.
Yeah. It's, in my sense, it's basically goodwill. It's a, hey guys, like, I know a lot of people are going to do this anyways. We're going to make it cheaper. And if you are on the fence, hey, now's the time to do it. We're going to make it cheaper for you. Yes, they might inspire some additional sales, but they're inspiring it in a very wholesome, in not insidious way. This is very straightforward of like, here you go. Cheaper right now. Go ahead and do it if you'd like. And I like that.
Yeah, me too. I don't really think that there's nothing bad that I can say about this particular change. And again, I think people who are potentially upset about this might just be in the I'm upset at Warcraft and Blizzard in general right now. So they're doing something that seems predatory. But again, I don't feel like it's predatory, because a lot of these sales were going to happen anyway. So I feel like it's giving money back to the community, if nothing else. One other piece of news from this week is that the Hall of Fame is full on the Horde side. So there are over 100 Horde teams who have now defeated Mythic Jaina. And so you can now, so there's a lot of Alliance slots that are still open. But once those Alliance slots close, then you will be able to do Mythic Battle of Dazar'alor Cross Realm. Yep,
for the first time since it was accidentally in their first week.
Yeah. But yeah, so I'm congratulations to all those Horde guilds that have managed to get Jaina down. She is not a pushover, although she did get nerfed. So she can now, her health has been reduced 5% on all difficulties, as well as on Mythic. So Alliance, if you're trying Jaina, she just got a lot easier. That's not a jab at the Alliance. I'm just talking about how there's still 82 slots open on that Hall of Fame. I'm not jabbing at the Alliance. This is not Horde bias. You guys are the ones who can still get Hall of Famed. The Tide Elemental now has 35% less health on Mythic difficulty only. And Chilling Touch does 10% less damage, again, on Mythic difficulty only. So, but her health down 5% across all difficulties. We were quite close to getting her down. We had a 7% wipe, so a 2% wipe on her last night, which was, man, a little bit frustrating, but so close.
So very, very close. So I think this will help. Since they've put this hotfix into play, we have seen 3 more guilds down Mythic Jaina on the Alliance side, as well as additional guilds down it on the Horde side that I wasn't tracking. And hopefully this will be done soon, because 5 more weeks, that's all you have until we're moving into the Crucible of Storms.
We should say, though, for Crucible of Storms, that doesn't mean that Cutting Edge or Ahead of the Curve are going away. Those achievements are still going to be there all the way through until we get the Nazjatar raid. What's that one called again? Is that like the Throne of, or
I want to say Throne of Tides, but it's just the natural
Throne of Azshara. I can't remember, because I thought her name was in there. Anyways, doesn't matter. The zone that's not even open yet has the raid that will make Ahead of the Curve for Battle of Dazar'alor no longer achievable. So,
yeah. So you can still get your Cutting Edge or your Ahead of the Curve up until 8.2 is released.
Exactly. And even then, I don't think it's on the release of 8.2 unless they release the raid with 8.2.
Yeah, it could be.
So it's whenever the raid opens, which we're not quite sure when that is.
Yeah.
I want to take a second now to thank our new patron, Brad B. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Faz will always be free, but if you do enjoy the content that we produce, then please do consider supporting us over at patreon.com/Faz. Brings us to our community resources and add-on section. This week, Manny's going to tell us all about KUI nameplates, which are a godsend because honestly, I logged in yesterday and my threat plates was broken and my LVUI was broken. And I was just like, okay, that's it. I'm done. I just can't see anything. It's broken forever.
Well, I'm sorry that happened to you. I've never used LVUI myself, but KUI nameplates is something that I've recently been using. It really does help a lot for customizing nameplates so that you can get the information that you want up front and just looks cool. I really do like the looks of it. It lets you pull a lot of information at a glance from the visual distinctions that it does. As with like many of the UIs that we talk about on this show, it has profiles. So you can set things for individual characters. You can set things for individual specs, or you can have like a default that just goes across all of your characters. We were talking about threat. This can be used in place of Omen Threat Meter. You can actually have it say in text what your percent threat is. It has the color coordination again, so that you can see if you are currently holding the threat, if it is you transitioning to losing threat, or if something else has the threat. It also has two modes for that. So you can have it in tank mode so that you can see if an off tank has it, or if it is in the other phases, or you can have it in a non-tank mode, in which case you only care if you have threat or somebody else does, because you just don't want it beating you up.
Yeah, and I've got to say, and I think because I was trying to mess up my threat plates, normally I don't actually have it showing me threat when I'm in a raid, because I don't really need to know. Like, if the tanks are doing their job, which our tanks are awesome and usually are doing their jobs unless they're dead, then I never have to worry about threat. So last night, because I had been messing with, like, my normal nameplates are broken, and I was like messing around trying to get just bars on my screen, it actually, whichever one ended up working, I can't even remember which one it was, had threat enabled. So we were doing pulls on Jaina, and everyone, like, she'd be green, 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 and then she'd turn yellow, and I was like, oh my god, no. Don't pay attention to me, Jaina. I'm a nobody.
Nobody. You were pulling some massive deeps on Jaina. So yeah, I think
threat right is actually like,
what's going on with that.
Yeah, threat is like terrifying when you've got those color changes, because like I was so sure she was just gonna walk over and whack me in the face with her staff and I was gonna die.
Well, I again, our tanks are good, but there are times where I'm looking at that that plate and it just shows me as the off tank, and I know as soon as the first tank's dead, that other tank better be there because I am dead next. there's like that much, whatever our Kariel's health bar is, there's like that much between me and getting slapped in the face. beyond that, though, you can see a lot of other information. You can see the cast bars from all enemies on their nameplates rather than just whoever you're targeting or whoever you're focusing. It also has color codes for that, so you can change the color between whether it is a cast that you can interrupt or not interrupt. One of the things that we were looking at Jaina before I was able to see the fight was, can we interrupt her main attack so that we can like lower the speed that she's hitting the tanks? And as soon as I was in there and I saw it, I knew instantly that no, you couldn't interrupt it. I didn't even have to try because my plates allowed me to see that at a glance. You can track things on the plates as well. Back in the day, rogues used to put their combo points on targets. So that would work like this. You can track, obviously, auras on there. That's debuffs or buffs that you put on targets. And you can actually separate them and filter them based on a number of criteria. I have it so that any debuff that I put on the target is on the bottom of the plate, and any buff that I can dispel is on the top of the plate. So instantly, before I even look at what the buff is, I know how I'm interacting with it.
That's really smart. I did notice when I got in there and installed this that it was showing me my holy power on the bars, which right now I have a weak aura that's kind of halfway between like where my character stands on the screen and where my bars are at the bottom that shows me what my holy power is. And it was actually kind of nice not to have to avert my eyes down a little bit. It seems like a little thing, but then I was like, oh man, actually just having my holy power right where I'm looking anyways, like right in front of my character, is really, really helpful, because I never had to even glance down or think about how much of the resources that I had accumulated. I was just like, oh, bang, I'm at 3. I can do a big move now, which was really, really helpful.
Yeah, definitely. And you can also have it filter out data as well. So like, let's say you're a warlock and you have umpteen different debuffs that you're throwing on a target, it can actually filter them so that it puts the one that's going to expire first. So left to right, not in the order that you casted it, but in the order that it's going to expire. So you know which one's the priority to refresh, and you don't have to be looking at 5 different timers. You only have to worry about the one that's coming up next. Along those lines, you can also change out things so that it can remove data that you don't want to see. You can blacklist certain things. You can whitelist certain things. You can, again, adjust it so that whatever buffs are on it, if it has nothing to do with you, if you didn't put the buff there, if you didn't put the debuff there, it filters it out. You could whitelist certain ones. So even if you are dealing with like, okay, I want to know when that player gets fort, regardless of whether I put fort on them or an enemy puts a fort on them, but I don't want to know what everything else is, you could whitelist individual spells. So just the ones that you want to deal with, you can deal with. There's a wealth of information that you can adjust on these. Beyond that, if you don't want to see something, if you want to filter what you're seeing and what you're not seeing, you can do that. And that was something that Joss and I were trying to fiddle with before recording this, was, okay, I can see the bars of everything, or I can see the bars of just the important NPCs, or I can see bars of just players, just allied players, just enemy players, whatever subcategory or mix of categories there are, is actually available in this, as long as you're able to go through the options and find out exactly what it is. Because unfortunately, some of them are a little bit harder to find than others, but it is there.
I did find that some of the things that I was looking for or trying to find were a little bit difficult just to find in the interface. And some of the things were things that I had to change in the like default Blizzard options. And some of them were things that I had to change in this, in the add-on. So it's a interesting kind of combinations of settings that you have to play with to get it to display exactly like you want it to. But overall, it was pretty easy to navigate. And the one thing that I found with this add-on, as opposed to other nameplate add-ons that I've used in the past, was that this has a name only mode, which isn't just like text names. It looks like that at a glance. But then I was playing around with it when we were in the Brawler's Guild, and I noticed that it actually, as a character was losing health, then like letters in their name were getting grayed out. So that when the character died, like when the name was totally gray, then the character was dead. So it was like a health bar built into text, which was a really cool kind of thing to use up a little bit less space on your screen, but still give you the information about like, are they alive or dead? How close are they to alive or dead? So that was a really cool thing that I haven't seen another nameplate add-on do. It might just be that I've never used it before, but I think that it is unique to KUI nameplates, I think.
I haven't seen it in other add-ons, but definitely the text-only function is very cool. And you can, again, set it up so that it works on part of the information you want and not others. So you could have friendly players just have their names, but you can have bars over enemy targets. And you can have it even ignore things based on exceptions. Everything that I've talked about, you can have exceptions put on. So you don't put friendly players' health up there. until they're below 20% in kind of an execute phase, at which point their bars show up and you're like, whoa, wait a second, that guy needs help. Maybe I'll throw him a heal as a DPS, even though it's not my normal role. You can have something where it will change color if somebody is in there. And if you're a warrior and you want to know when you're in execute phase, that bar changing color into get this guy is something that can help out your gameplay.
That was actually really cool, because that's one talent that I've chosen as a paladin that I never used to use. I think it's Hammer of Wrath, I think, is my execute ability. I could be wrong about the name, but it's basically I can, you know, it only becomes available to me when I'm in my Avenging Wrath or Crusade, or if the target is below 30% or 25% or something health. So I never used to use it, but I've started using it and it's really, really good. And so to have that visual on the nameplate show up and be like, hey, hammer this guy. Okay, now hammer that guy. Very helpful.
Definitely, especially in fights in Battle of Zor'Alar where you're dealing with multiple units with separate health bars. So if you're dealing with the Champions of Light, that is a big one where you have those adds and they all will fall into execute range throughout the fight. If you're dealing with the the Jadefire Champions, they have separate health bars and you'll have two separate points where you'll be in that execute range. And there's, again, many fights that litter throughout that raid that have the same sort of thing. This will help you identify which targets are prone to that execute window. Beyond that, the last thing that I really recommend to people is that overriding the CVARs allows it to do some custom behavior, which really annoys me with the default WoW UI. If you have ever tanked or ever had a large creature come right up in your grill, right? So you're dealing with, you know, the iconic boss crotch, and you can't see its health bar because the guy's so tall. You can override that so that the health bar will never go outside of your screen, even if the entire character is out. So you can see what your target is. You can always have that health bar there. You can always interact with it. You can make sure.
Awesome. I had no idea what that actually meant. But that is so awesome, because so often I find I'm having to like angle my camera way up to try to find like, oh, OK, that's I'm fighting the right thing. Like, this is what its health is at.
Exactly. And you could also have it put little highlights on stuff. So your focus could have a highlight on the bar, so you know that that's the creature you have focus. Your target could have a highlight, so you know when you're tab targeting, that's what I'm targeting. You could have it fade out everything else, so that when you're targeting something, all the other ones are faded. You could have it have a mouse over. So if you're doing a mouse over macro, right, and you're looking at the various nameplates in your raid frames, you can have it highlighted on their bars based on like, oh, that's that boss or that's that player on your screen. Again, it takes something that's very simple and it gives you a lot more customization, a lot more visual hooks so that you can quickly figure out what you're doing and improve your play and your reaction accordingly.
Very, very cool. So again, that is KUI nameplates. You guys can find that on whatever it is that you use to install your WoW add-ons. Personally, I use the used to be Curse, now Twitch app, but there are many ways to get this stuff. That's not going to do it. We actually have emails this week. So you can send your emails to fazpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also do what these two did this week and send us questions over in Discord. So Roderick sends us a question asking, do you think the war campaigns are setting up for a Bane chief or a Sour chief? So basically, who do we think is going to be the new war chief of the Horde once Sylvanas is kicked out? Because regardless of whether they kill her or jail her or whatever, it's pretty safe to say at this point that she's no longer going to be war chief of the Horde. So
my war chief? No.
I just rolled my eyes so hard, you guys. But I mean, like, realistically, I don't think that there is any way that they wrap this up in a satisfactory manner where she remains head of the Horde. I mean, I can't see a through line here that the player base will be happy with, myself included. Like, I really don't think that there's any way that she stays in power. I think that's really unfortunate. I think there's a lot they could have done with her character, and the way they've taken her character kind of sucks. But I don't think that even I would be happy if we wrapped up BFA and it was like, yeah, Sylvanas is still in charge. I'd be like, what? Manny, can you see any way that this plays out, that she stays in charge?
No. I think we're dealing with her naming Nathanos and having to step down.
All right.
I'm trolling.
So that would be the third option, Nathanos chief.
No, I think between Bane and Sarfang, I think actually a third option is what is more likely, and that is that the Horde is going to maybe abolish the War Chief role
and become more like a council.
Yeah. I would really like that. Except that often in World of Warcraft, it has been a face against face. It's been Thrall versus Varian, or like Anduin takes up the lead and Sylvanas takes up the lead. So I guess an overall leader is something that maybe Blizzard wouldn't write. But I don't see Sarfang or Bane really being groomed in the same sort of strength that I saw them grooming Vol'jin for the job. And I don't see anybody else who is quite there to like sort of fill that gap right now.
That's kind of, I think, the camp that I'm in, that I'm in as well, because I feel like as much as, you know, Bane and Sarfang have been set up as opposing Sylvanas, I don't necessarily think that either one of them, or even Lothamar, I think would be potentially another candidate, or Rokon. None of them really have had time to be the center of attention enough to then move into the War Chief role. Like, it took them a really long time to get there with Garrosh, and then a really long time to get there with Vol'jin, and they were, you know, had their own novels. And I feel like if at the end of BFA, if Bane or Sarfang is in charge, I'm going to kind of be like, really? I mean, yeah. We all know how I feel about Sarfang, and then obviously Bane's actions in the most recent war campaign very much, I think, are better than Sarfang, but still, I mean, he is still a traitor, you know, but still better than Sarfang, because at least Bane didn't abandon us. You know, like, he stood up to Sylvanas and now got imprisoned for it. He didn't just run away with his tail between his legs. I know orcs don't have tails.
But he didn't just go up to her and just like, you know, stomp up to her and be like, I'm not doing this. You're going to have to kill me first before you twist that soul into like your own little personal assassin.
He did confront her. He did confront her on the boat, though, when it was happening.
Yeah. And then he sort of stomped off and didn't make it the like, this is a do or die moment. He never forcefully stood up and said, I will not obey this order and I will not go down this path. He was sort of like, yeah, like, you're screwing up. I'm going to like work behind the scenes and undermine you. And that's the betrayal.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the betrayal that's harder to defend. Like, if he was just like, this is not what the Horde's about. We're not going down this way. You're staying here. I'm calling a coup right now. Mm-hmm. And had his braves go like escort her to jail, or escort Daylan back to his family as like a no, I'm taking charge now. Or even the Mokgrar, right? Like the combat to the death is like, no, I'm challenging you for lead of the Horde, which his father did, and it would be very much the like, allusion to the garage story that I guess we would also hate. So it's just a very scary.
And, you know, it's funny because they talked so much about, and again, I think we're going to talk about this, the whole honor thing at a different episode, but, you know, they talked so much about honorable, but so many of the actions of Bane and Sarfang, I feel like have kind of been dishonorable. And you're right, from an orcish standpoint and a Tauren standpoint, like the way to be honorable is, you know, the death by combat, the Makara. So why is no one doing that? If they're so honorable, why are none of them putting their lives on the line for what's right? You know? So I don't know. I just I don't think, I definitely don't want Sarfang to be the head of the Horde. I don't. I okay, so really
between
like
the two, doing the poison pill, you're Bane.
I'm Bane. Yes, I am definitely team Bane. I like Bane a lot as a character. I liked Cairn as well. And I liked the whole story of them and, you know, how he stood up for what was right and challenged Garrosh and then, you know, only lost because of the poison weapon, like, you know, all that kind of stuff. Super freaking cool story. And I feel like I wouldn't be as bothered if Bane then stood up and did the same thing, because when it's a tradition, it feels less like a story being repeated, if that makes sense. It's kind of like what I would expect. And maybe even if it wasn't like Bane that did it, like maybe because, you know, son of Cairn and Cairn did this, like if they had taken another character and had that character do the challenge or whatever. But I feel like the Makara itself, even though like it's happened a few times in the Horde's history, but even then, like I didn't feel like Garrosh being challenged by Thrall was retreading the earlier Cairn story, because it's the way things should be done. So I'm more okay with it.
Okay, so never gonna happen. But out of nowhere, Makara is called. And so Sylvanas says that she's not going to fight. She's going to name her champion. And so Nathanos gets obviously named as her champion in the Makara. And Bane says, well, I'm going to name my champion. And the player character gets named as the champion. And that's the Horde finish to the war campaign, is you defeat Nathanos. Win the challenge, elevate Bane to War Chief or Sarfang, because actually between the two, if I had to pick the poison pill, because I can't ask you the question and not poison it to myself, I pick Sarfang. So
one other way that they could do it, although, well,
I just don't. Okay,
this would be this would be the most interesting way to do it from a player perspective, but it would never work from a canon perspective. But if you could, like, if it all culminated in that and the player character was the champion and you could choose who you were going to champion. So you, like, you could install the next war chief of the Horde, and that could be, you know, you could choose Bane or Sarfang or Rokhan or Lothamar or, you know, Garona or whatever. You know, you could choose your Horde champion that you want to be the next war chief. That would, you know, what would be really, really cool is if they did that and then used it as like an in-game player vote. And so whoever, like however many players went through and played, in the end, they said, okay, the most popular, by popular vote, air quotes, like by Makara, the new war chief of the Horde is insert this person here. And I know that they work like two expansions ahead and they'd never do anything like that. But how cool would that be if we had like a community voted next war chief of the Horde?
And
what if you could champion Sylvanas? What if you could, instead of fighting Nathanos, what if you could be Sylvanas' champion in that too?
I guess that's something you want. But I think it's a very cool thing. And yes, giving it that additional option.
That was like pie in the sky like wish, but
oh no. The pie in the sky wish that I never actually gave voice to is the player challenges Sylvanas, kills Sylvanas, becomes the war chief. So the player is the war chief. And well, you have a list of the racial leaders.
You know that they'll never do that.
Yeah, but like I said, the pie in the sky, right? And then the council is all your war council serving you, kind of like when you were the champion out in AU Draenor or when you
I really do believe that it's, I know you were in the Legion Order Hall campaigns, you mean? Yeah. I really do believe that Warcraft is better going back to the RTSs, you know, going back to vanilla, all that kind of stuff, even though that's not the stuff that I played through at the time when it was current content. I really do feel like a lot of the story was better. Even looking at Burning Crusade with Illidan and Kael'thas, and looking at Wrath of the Lich King with Arthas and Malygos, and the story is better when it focuses on the big lore characters. I think WoD and Legion weren't all that great, and I wasn't as invested because it was about me, and I'm like, I'm boring. I don't want to play through a story about me. I want to see, you know, what Anduin's doing, what Varian's doing, what Sylvanas is doing, like these big lore characters that, like, I care what they think and do. And that's the story I want to see. So I wouldn't want to see the player ever become the war chief, because I would much rather be, I guess, an informed peon is the best way to put it, because I feel like they've put us into that peon type role in BFA. But you're not seeing as much of the story. Like, a lot of things seem like you don't know what Sylvanas's plans are. Like, you're not a co-conspirator as much as I would hope that you would be. So there's like big pieces of the story that feel like they're missing in BFA. And I just wish that you were more present to witness those things. The RTS has had it a little bit easier, right? Because you could just control those players. Like, you didn't have your own player character that you were running through the RTS. So the storytelling in the RTS is a little bit easier, but still, an informed peon is probably the best. Like, I don't want to necessarily affect events, but I want to know what all the events are.
I like the role that they've sort of carved out, where you are the champion of the Horde. You are this like legendary acclaimed soldier, have done all this stuff, so there's no way that anybody treats you like a somewhat informed peon. You're clearly bigger than that. There's no way Sylvanas strikes you down, even though she knew you were involved, because you just have too
you
much.
You were involved. I was not involved. You were involved.
See, Sylvanas can put the chains on Bane because he's a racial leader and he backs after. If she tries to put the chains on me, the champion of the Horde, oh, there's a lot of stuff that'll go down. She knows that I'm not going to just sit there and be walked off. And I like putting that story together, where there are larger figures still going out in the world. There are a lot of people who do not report to you and therefore can have their own agendas and move things around, but you are still noteworthy. Bane will still come to you because you are a proven champion.
So yeah, and I think we kind of want the same thing. I think we're just naming it different, calling it different things. Yeah, but I think we do kind of like the same role. I don't ever want to be High Lord again. I don't ever want to be Huntmaster or, you know, general and, you know, head of anything. I want larger characters more than me.
One of the generals.
Yeah,
right? One of the generals. If you had to put this as a military, we are no longer there as fresh grunts. We are generals,
right?
But there are still leaders that that have nothing to say from us, because they've got their own priorities and their own political intrigue, and that's where the story works best, mm-hmm. as you and I are saying. But
well, when it comes right down to it, though, if I had to choose, I would definitely choose Bane over Sarfang. I just hope that they have an interesting way about like going about it, and that it feels like it fits into the story as a whole and nothing feels necessarily forced. And I hope, like we talked about off the top of the show, that all of this kind of player choice that they've introduced culminates in something really meaningful.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that if you choose to stick with Sylvanas through to the end,
which I'm going to do just to see that part of the story.
Oh yeah. And I just mean in all players, right? That your choices are justified for your character, right? It seems very much that this is something that they hadn't originally planned to do to give that player agency. And the way that they have put it in is that they're giving you the option to go with Sylvanas, but they're giving you every option not to go with Sylvanas. And as soon as you make the choice that like, and this is a bridge too far, that's it. You're off the line. Right. And I'm hoping that if you decide to stick through it to the end, there is a good justification and the ending is just as satisfying to you.
Yeah, I agree. Do you want to tell us who our second question comes to us from today? That was kind of a sentence that made sense.
Well, being able to read Jocelyn, we have Solophane, who is another person on our Discord, who posed the following question. Where do you think we're going to end? Sorry, we're going at the end of this expansion with regards to the factions, i.e. united against the big bad, splintered and shattered, or staying the same. And for me personally, I think that it is a mix. It's a mix of one being united against the big bad as Nazoth starts to show up and as we lead into whatever the next big bad is beyond that, and kind of staying the same. I think what they're doing is they're realigning the Horde, and maybe to a lesser extent the Alliance, where they don't want them to be able to be friendly anymore. The meetings between the leaders aren't going to be like a, we can do this. It's going to be a, I can never trust you again, right? Our borders are close to you. If I even see you again, you better hope that I don't have my sword in hand, but I'm going to let you walk away today. And I think that's more along the lines of where they want to put it, where it's no longer a kumbaya moment between Bane and Anduin. Like if Bane were to become war chief, he cannot have such a good terms with Anduin.
See, right? And I feel like it's good. Like the way I see them setting it up, especially with the cinematic between Bane and Jaina, obviously when it started, it was very much like, oh, we've come a long way from there. Like you're delivering me the bomb. Jaina goes all super crazy and is about to blow them away. Like by the end of that cinematic, she had almost like come around on Bane again because of everything that he said. And it was a great cinematic and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very, very well done. But it seems like if they go down the there's an uprising, rebellion, whatever you want to call it, which seems like that's the way they're going. Like I said, every single Horde leader seemed, with the one exception of, and I can't even remember her name, but she was the high warlord somebody. She was the orc anyways. She's the one that was talking about loyalty and was like, well, yeah, that's what happens when you betray your war chief. Everyone else was some form of, well, this is no good. But the majority of them basically just didn't want to stand up against Sylvanas at that point in time. But you can very clearly see that it's coming. So assuming that Sylvanas is no longer the war chief, that Sarfang or Bane, and Sarfang we know is all chummy with Anduin now, if it's one of those two, we know Bane had a really good relationship with Anduin in the beginning. If either one of those two becomes the war chief of the Horde, I mean, that's about as close to let's all kumbaya be one faction as I can ever see them getting. Like, Anduin and Jaina have no problem with Bane and have been extremely friendly with him in the past. So, like, I feel like that's moving it in the direction of uniting against a big bad, which...
Okay, no, yeah, neither you or I want the, like...
I don't think anyone really wants that.
Differences aside, after everything that's happened, we clearly want this to mean something. Since
well, that's the thing, because it feels like... It feels like, yeah, if we unite against Nazoth at the end of this expansion, why the F did we even bother with BFA? Like that, all the stuff with the starting of the war and the Azerite and everything we've been through just feels like so, it's so much worse than it does right now. And it feels really bad right now. And it felt really stupid in the beginning and it hasn't improved from there. So it's just like, if in the end of all of this, nothing comes of it and it was just filler between introducing the new big bad of the expansion, Like, how bad is that going to feel? Like, that's just going to be the absolute worst. I can't even wrap my head around, like, if that is what actually happens, like, what are the Warcraft, what are they even doing?
So here's, and I guess that's why I'm being a little more wishful about where I want it to end and where I think it will end.
Yeah, because that's the thing. I want it to end somewhere totally different than that. But it's really hard to imagine a world where we don't just unite against the big bad under Bane, who's besties with Jaina and Anduin. Like, really and truly.
Yeah. So the only way that that happens is if the Alliance does something to piss off Zarafang or Bane in the, I was trusting you, I helped you against my own people, and then you did this? You did this? We can never sit at the same table again, and then walk off in a huff, and that just breaks down all alliances, because if they do that, that's the string that's holding them together. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and you've talked about that in the past, how you kind of hope that BFA is the catalyst for the factions never coming again united, like never coming together again united against a big bad, that they will always just deal with threats in their own ways. So what do you think that the Alliance would realistically do that would set Bane off like that to never want to work with Jaina and Anduin again?
Honestly, it has to be something in the, like, not Nyalotha, but in Nashatar. There has to be something where maybe an inverse of the Broken Shore, where it's like, we've detained Sylvanas, we're marching together, we're fighting into the raid, whatever we go to beyond that in 8.3, and it's like, okay, we'll hold them so that you guys can get out, and then Jaina's like, screw this, we can like end the Horde leadership here, and she closes the gate, and the Horde manages to get through despite her closing the gate, but suffers losses because of that, and it's like, wow, you completely betrayed us on that. Or even if it's like, again, an inverse of the Broken Shore, where she didn't mean to close the gate, she tried her best, but something happened outside of the view of the Horde.
I really hope they don't do that. I agree with you. Like, it would be cool, or I could see if it was like, if Jaina betrayed Bane somehow, I could see that. I mean, if she finally decided that she wanted to put an end to the Horde, although I think she's softening the, like I said, the cinematic seemed like she was softening towards Bane a little bit, but you know, let's assume that she goes off the deep end and that she does decide that the Horde can no longer be allowed to live, then sure, maybe she, because we still don't know exactly how we get to Nashatar, but we know that it's used to be underwater and is no longer underwater, and something is like holding the water back, or it's been raised from the bottom of the sea, or something along those lines. I'm sure it'll be fleshed out a little bit more in the coming patches. But basically, like, if say Jaina figures out what that magic is or something and just unleashes the power of the sea and it all comes rushing back in on top of Nashatar and anyone left behind is drowned, or that's her intention, I can see that happening, and I can see that being something that Bane would then be like, oh, I'm walking away from the table and I can't believe you betrayed me. Maybe, because I was thinking something along the lines of maybe, I don't know, Tyrande and possibly Jaina and Greymane all coming together behind Anduin's back or something, and I don't know, nuking Orgrimmar off the face of the planet, much like Theramore, you know, like, but again, like, so many of these things outside of like Jaina kind of going rogue and using her frost mage water magic to drown out the Horde or something to avenge her father. Anything outside of that kind of feels like a retread. Like I said, like if we knew Gorgrimmar, oh wait, that's just like Theramore. Like if we, you know, do this, that, the other thing, that's just like this other thing they did before. So
yeah, I want it to be in line with the story. I want it to push the story forward. And honestly, I want the Alliance to be a driving force in it.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if I said it on this show, but I'm pretty sure I have said at least that I dislike how passive the Alliance is in a lot of
the... Oh, you've definitely said that on the show.
Yeah. I'm saying I've definitely said that, but I'm not sure if I've said this part on the show. We have had in the parts of BFA that we have seen so far, we have had Tyrande be like, screw you, Andor, and I'm doing it anyways, and Greymane back her up. We have had Greymane have a really strong conversation with the Proudmoore family, with Jaina's mom, to get her back and be instrumental in bringing that family together. And Greymane's more in line with like a Warhawk Jaina and a Warhawk Tyrande and like the entire Night Warrior thing. And if that more zealot part of the Alliance were to like put their voice behind maybe making Greymane the new lead, because why does it have to be the King of Stormwind? Could it not be the Greymane? He is also a king, as the new High King of the Alliance, and that's the shift that happens in the Alliance to respond to a more warlike horde. To respond to a more warlike horde, they become a more warlike alliance. That would be actually a very interesting change, and it would mean that Anduin loses power without ever making a necessarily wrong decision.
Yeah, I mean, Greymane and Anduin are so close that I can't see Greymane ever spearheading any kind of action against Anduin. So I'm not quite sure how that would happen, but I do agree that the three of them together, Tyrande, Jaina, and Greymane, do seem to be the force in the Alliance that could send them in a different direction. But like you even kind of said it, that if the Alliance responds to a more warlike horde by becoming more warlike themselves, it's like, it's still kind of reactionary.
Yes, but it means they might stop becoming reactionary.
Yeah, they might be proactive in the future. Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Where they go in and they're like, yeah, we're not here to cripple the Zandalari and then back away and be like, yeah, don't come after us or you'll see what you get next time. They're like, yeah, we're going to kill the king. We're going to blow up their harbor and we're going to take their princess and lock her up so none of them think to do it again. That kind of push, which is right now currently just the broken narrator of the Horde side, right, is something that is at least believable enough from a more Warhawk thing. And I think the fact that Greymane doesn't want to do that but might do it to keep the Alliance together so that those factions don't again run off on their own, would be a very good story point where it makes Greymane not the bad guy. He's not seeking power, but he realizes that he has to take power, right, away from somebody that he considers almost a son to him in order to keep his faction together. But saying that, I have played through the Kul Tiran faction storyline where you get them as a playable race.
Oh, the allied race quest line.
Yeah. And they're totally on board with Anduin. They give him a ship. That was part of the joke earlier.
Yeah.
So they've already sort of partially squashed that. And at the end of it, you have all the factions leaders there for Anduin getting his new ship, whatever you happen to name it. And so there's no political tension in the Alliance. There's no storyline other than what's the Horde up to? Let's go spy on that. Mm. And that's very frustrating to me as somebody who wants to see the Alliance take center stage, have a expansion that is totally centered around what they're up to, what they're doing, and not them being reactionary or passive.
Right. So have you haven't actually played all the way through the war campaign on the Alliance side yet, because what I would be interested to know is if there is the Alliance equivalent to the Horde, like gathered around the bonfire, where you can actually go and talk to all the Alliance leaders and see how they're feeling about all of this, which even then, I can't really understand. I can't really see it being much different, to be honest, than just, oh my God, what did Sylvanas do now? That's so evil.
But again, that, like, regardless of, like, whatever their differing opinions is, it's what is the Horde leader doing over there?
Yeah.
Not like, what are we doing?
Yeah. Well, and like I said, I don't even know if the option to talk to all the leaders, if they gather in one place to talk about the intelligence gathered by Shaw or what. But it would be interesting to see if there is more dialogue and if it has anything to do with the Horde, or if it's just like, here's like talking about the Alliance instead of just standing around talking about the Horde. But yeah, so I think overall, Solo got a little bit off topic from your original question, but I think the way I think they're going is united against a big bad, but the way that I hope they're going is possibly even down your kind of splintered, shattered idea where they're not working with each other, but they're not working well with themselves either. And I think that might be the most interesting storyline.
Yeah, I because
that's kind of, I mean, what you described with Gen taking over and potentially becoming more warlike. And then you've probably then got Anduin and Velen and possibly even Kalia. Like, we can't forget that she's in the mix, right? She's around there somewhere, and possibly even the person that Jaina decides she wants to take Derek to at the end of this section of the war campaign. So Kalia is still she's still present on the Alliance side.
Okay, so do you want my tinfoil hat for Kalia?
Yes, absolutely.
My tinfoil hat for Kalia is that she is a big plant by the light, and as the light becomes more evil, or they decide to push that part of the light, being this sort of totalitarian thing, she's part of that. She starts influencing things. The church it becomes maybe more of an indoctrination sort of thing. The Lightborn and the
Lightforged. Those Jedi.
Yeah. Well, I think they're Lightforged in AU and Lightborn. Either way, the Lightforged and I, right? They have to take a hard look at it. We have everybody who's light aligned, like Velen, like Talorian or
Turalian.
Yeah, Turalian, sorry. All sort of like having to question their faith, and that becomes the Alliance centered thing, where it's about them, because that connection with the light has very much been an Alliance thing. And with the Void Elves being there, and the Void Elves sort of like representing the other side and showing how darkness or void magic isn't necessarily evil, I think that could be the very Alliance-centered thing. So my second hope for Alliance-centered storyline is that.
Fair enough. Very, very cool theories and theory crafting, lore crafting coming out of these questions. So thank you guys so much for sending them in. We've got a couple from Discord that we're going to talk about next week. And like I said, you can always send emails over to fazpodcast@gmail.com or send us your questions over on Discord. Manny, where can you find that Discord?
Well, you can find that Discord at bit.ly/fazdiscord. And there's always conversations happening there on top of being able to submit questions to the show. And I guess, yeah, just feel free to join and message us over there.
Where else can folks find you on the internet?
Well, I can always be found on Twitter at TrueVinManny. That is true without the E. And you can also find me on a new show that I'm doing. That is Gent, that I am doing with Gotti. That's Richard Hardcastle, and that is gaming entertainment news that we do on a weekly basis. Joss, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Twitch. I'm at Joss Plays. Also, don't forget to check out TGIstudios.com for links to all the shows and things that I do, as well as our show notes for For Azeroth. A lot of people ask us where they can find those. So that's the place, TGIstudios.com/Faz. That's going to do it for us this week. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Until next time, may all your hits be crits.